Life was suddenly so close, and he didn't want to die.
I can't abandon him, Kyla. Forgive me.
You'd only need forgiveness if you'd asked me to leave him.
Kyla was gone for 5 agonizing minutes. When he broke the surface of the water, he was swimming at such great speed that it carried him into the air. He landed on his feet. He'd made a harness of the rope, and it pulled Nasha behind him. Now he grabbed the rope and pulled it in rapidly. Nasha virtually flew clear of the water.
Hold breath, good.
Kyla swept Logan into his arms as something huge broke through the water behind them. Something slapped into Kyla and sent all 3 of them sprawling. Then the chamber was lit with iridescent blue light that came from Kyla himself. He was darting about, flipping from stalagmite to stalagmite, using them to change direction unpredictably. Logan had no idea how Kyla was fighting it at all in this pitch black, and no hope of fighting it for himself. He didn't even know how big it was or what it looked like. He lost sight of Kyla, or Kyla disappeared. Suddenly, it shot toward Logan and Nasha. Logan threw his hands out and felt slimy hide rush past his fingers. Stalagmites crashed down everywhere, then it pulled back and turned its head. A light as silvery cold as the moon bloomed in its green marbled eyes, and then the great snuffling head turned. The slimy snout slid past Logan's cheek as the beast's head turned. Logan's fingers brushed a broken chunk of stalagmite and he grabbed it. The motion attracted the creature. It pulled back and the light from its eye illuminated Logan like torchlight. The great cat's eye turned to him and came into focus. Logan buried the jagged rock into that great eye and ground it back and forth. Luminous green silver light spilled on Logan with the creature's blood. The eye went out like a blown candle. A moment later, a dark figure blurred past Logan and attacked the blind eye.
Logan, was that Kali?
No. Kali's different. Worse. That was just a dragon.
And all light faded. When he woke, the 3 of them had been fitted with harnesses, and Kyla was hoisting them all by a rope that must have been attached to a pulley high above. They were ascending the central shaft of the stacks. It was a huge metal tube 30 paces across, and all of the enormous fans had been stopped. How did Kyla manage that? The trip took several more minutes, and the whole time Logan was aware of his arm burning and tingling where the creature's eye blood had spilled on him. He didn't have the courage to look at it.
We have a man inside who helped me. The Sakage is now one of your most important allies, my king. Maybe your only ally.
A few minutes later, they reached a section where the pipes turned horizontal. With great care, Kyla untied Logan and then Nasha. He cut the ropes and let them fall into the abyss. The pulley followed. He led them down the narrowing horizontal section until they reached a door. Logan found himself face to face with Gorky.
Logan, meet our inside guy. Gorky, your money?
You! Kill him.
Gorky's eyes bulged. He grabbed at the guard's whistle he carried on a lanyard around his neck. Yes! It was that fast. That easy. Kyler dragged the body down the tunnel to drop it into the shaft and returned a minute later. Logan had just ordered his first kill. Kyler didn't ask for an explanation. It was an eerie, awesome, awful thing. It was power, and it felt disconcertingly wonderful.
Your Majesty, your kingdom awaits.
When Caldrosa Wynn and 10 of the other girls from the Craven Dragon emerged from Mama Kay's safe house, the Warrens were changed. There was a nervous excitement in the air. The Nocta Hamata had been a triumph, but repercussions were coming. Everyone knew it. Mama Kay had told the girls they needed to leave her subterranean safe house because the secret of its existence had leaked. Somehow, the Night Angel had saved them all from being slaughtered by Hugh Gibbett. Caldrosa had heard rumors of the Night Angel before, right after the invasion, but she hadn't believed them. Now, they all knew he was real. They'd seen Hugh Gibbett's body. Mama Kay had told them she would smuggle them out as quickly as possible, but moving 300 women out of the city was going to take time. They had ways to get around or under the God King's new walls, but it wasn't easy. Caldrosa Wynn's group was supposed to go out tonight. Mama Kay had told them that if they wanted to stay in the city, if they had husbands or boyfriends or family to go back to, all they had to do was not show up at the rendezvous tonight. The Warrens were quiet, expectant, as the women made their way to the safe house. They were conspicuous, of course, all of them still dressed in their rich whoring clothes. Master Picun's design seemed obscene in the broad daylight, in the context of open streets. Worse, some of the girls' costumes were stained with brown-black smears of dried blood. But the women passed no guards, and it was soon clear that the Caladorans didn't go into the Warrens now. The residents who saw them looked at them strangely. One alley they tried to traverse was blocked by a building that must have been knocked down during the Nocta Hamata itself, and it forced Caldrosa Wynn and the others to walk straight through the Durden Market. The market was busy, but the former whores passed through it. A wave of silence preceded them. Every eye was on them. The girls set their jaws ready for the derision their clothing would surely evoke. But nothing happened. A stout fishwife leaned over her stall.
You don't know sprout, girls!
The women were caught off guard. The approval hit them like a slap in the face. Everywhere it was the same. People everywhere nodded in greeting and acceptance. Even the women who, a week ago, would have sneered at rent girls even as they envied their good looks and easy lives. Even as the rabbits waited for the God King to crush them, as they knew he must, they shared a unity forged of persecution. The rabbits had surprised themselves with their own bravery that night, and somehow the whores bore their standard. The gloriously solitary two-day ride to Sanaria had only one problem. There was no irritating child, no domineering hag, no verbal sparring, no humiliation. But the time gave V an opportunity to see how flimsy her plans were. The first plan was to go to the God King. It had seemed great for about 5 minutes. She'd tell him that Kyla was dead. She'd tell him Jarl was dead. She'd ask for her gold, and she'd leave.
Right.
Sister Ariel's musings about the spell on V were far too specific to be guesses. V would either have a short leash or a long leash, but she'd have a leash. Gareth Ursul had promised to break her. It wasn't the kind of promise he'd forget. In truth, V felt broken already. She was losing her edge. It was one thing to feel bad for killing Jarl. Jarl had kept her alive. He'd been a friend and someone who would never demand the use of her body. He hadn't been a threat, physically or sexually. Kyler was a different matter altogether. And yet even now, riding slowly through the streets of Sanaria, her hood close around her face, V couldn't stop thinking about him. She was actually sorry he was dead. Maybe even sad. Kyler had been a damn good wet boy, one of the best. It was a shame he'd been killed with an arrow, probably from hiding. Not even a wet boy could stop that.
That's it. Could happen to anyone. Makes me realize my own mortality. It's just a shame.
It wasn't just a shame. That wasn't what she felt, and she knew it. Kyler had been kind of cute. If you could think kind of cute with a mental sneer, kind of charming. Well, not that charming, but he did try. Really, it was Yuli's fault. Yuli had talked and talked about how great he was. Fuck. So maybe she'd entertained a whim that Kyler could be the kind of man who could understand her. He'd been a wet boy, and somehow he'd left it and become a decent person. If he could do it, maybe she could too. Yes, he was a wet boy, but he was never a whore.
You think he could understand that? Forgive it? Sure. You go ahead with your little crush, V. Ball your eyes out like a little girl. Go ahead and pretend you could have been an Aline, making a little home and having a little life. I'm sure it would have been a great fun to suckle brats and crochet baby blankets. The truth is, you didn't even have the courage to admit you had a crush on Kyler until you knew he was safely dead.
All the things V had always hated about women were suddenly showing up in herself. For Nysel's sake, she even missed Yuli, like some sort of fucking mother.
Well, that was nice. Boo-hoo. Do we feel better now? Because we still have a problem.
She sat on her horse outside Drissa Niles' shop. The bitch witch had said the weaves were dangerous, but Drissa might be able to free V from the God King's magic. Looking at the modest shop, V thought the smart money was on the God King. The God King would make her a slave. Drissa Nile would either free her or kill her. V went inside. She had to wait half an hour while the two diminutive, bespectacled Niles took care of a boy who'd been splitting firewood and buried an axe in his foot. But after his parents took him home, V said that Sister Ariel had sent her. The Niles closed shop immediately. Drissa seated her in one of the patient rooms, while Tever drew back a section of the roof to let sunlight in. They looked alike. Baggy clothes over short, lumpy bodies, graying brown hair as straight as sheaves of wheat, spectacles and single earrings. They moved with the easy familiarity of long partnership, but Tever Nile clearly deferred to his wife. They both appeared to be in their 40s, but scholarly Tever seemed perpetually befuddled, while Drissa left no doubt that she was aware of all things at all times. They sat at either end of her, holding each other's hand behind her back. Drissa rested her free hand on V's neck, and Tever laid his fingers on the skin of her forearm. V felt a cool tingle in her skin.
So, how do you know Ariel?
She killed my horse to keep me from going into Ezra's wood.
I see.
Tever jerked backward and fell off his stool, smacking the back of his head against the stone of the fireplace.
Don't touch anything!
As fast as he fell, he was on his feet again.
By the 100, I nearly incinerated all of us. Drissa, look at this.
Oh, Ariel said it was trapped in some interesting ways.
Now you tell me? Interesting. She calls this interesting.
She said you were the best with small weaves.
She did?
Well, she said Drissa.
Of course she did. Damn sisters can't admit a man might be good, not even for a second.
Tevor?
Yes, dear?
I'm not seeing it. Can you lift it?
Tever didn't say anything. V turned to see what his expression was.
Please, hold still, child.
For 10 minutes they worked in silence. Or at least V thought they worked. Aside from something like feather brushes on her spine, she felt nothing.
Are we done?
Done? We haven't started. I was inspecting the damage. Interesting. I'll say it's interesting. There are 3 spells protecting the primary spell. I can get them. Breaking the last one is going to hurt a lot. The good news is that you came to us. The bad news is that by touching the weave, I've disrupted it. If I can't break it in perhaps an hour, it'll blow your head off. You might have said it was a Vordmeister who put the spell on you. Any other surprises?
What's the primary spell?
It's a compulsion spell, V. Go ahead, Devor.
Devor didn't seem to be able to speak while he was working. Drissa, on the other hand, had no problem. V could see her hands beginning to glow faintly as she spoke.
It's going to start hurting soon, V, and not just physically. We can't numb you to the pain because he's trapped that area of your brain. Numbing you is one of the first things a healer would do, usually, so he's made it lethal. Hold still now.
The world went white and stayed white. V was blind.
Just listen to my voice, V. Relax.
Suddenly, the world returned. She could see.
4 more times and we'll have the first spell. It might be easier if you close your eyes.
V snapped her eyes shut.
So, compulsion.
Right. Compulsion magic is very limited. For the spell to hold, the caster must have authority over you. You have to feel you owe the caster your obedience. It would be worst with a parent or a mentor or a general if you are in the army.
Or a king. Or a god. Holy hells.
Regardless, the good news is that you can throw off a compulsion if you can throw off that person's hold over you.
Brilliant! Bloody brilliant! Mad and sick, but genius! Did you see how he's anchored the traps in her own Glorvirdin? He's making her sustain his spells. Horribly inefficient, but...
Devor!
Right, back to work.
These stomach muscles convulsed like she was throwing up.
Throw it off! How?
Oh, the compulsion? Well, we should be able to break it this afternoon. It is a little tricky, though. If you try to untie it the wrong way, you just make it tighter. It won't be a problem for you.
Wise...
Magi are forbidden the use of compulsions, but we learn to protect ourselves from them. If you didn't have us, to throw off the compulsion requires an outward sign of an inward change, a symbol to show you've changed your loyalties. You'll have that covered, too, as soon as you take the white dress and the pendant.
V looked at her blankly.
When you enroll in the Chantry... You do intend to enroll in the Chantry, don't you?
I guess.
Tell her about Puleta Vigras.
You just like that story because it makes the Chantry look bad.
Oh, go on, ruin the story.
Long story short. 200 years ago, the head of one of the orders was using compulsion on her subordinates, and they didn't find out until one of the Magi, Puleta Vigrasen, married a magus. Her new loyalty to her husband broke the compulsion and led to several sisters being severely punished.
Oh, that was the worst rendition of that story I have ever heard. That marriage not only probably saved the Chantry, but in the twisted minds of those spinsters, it also confirmed that a woman who married would never truly be loyal to the Chantry. I can't wait until the chattel gather and...
Devor, one more?
Again, the little man went back to work.
Sorry. You'll get more than enough Chantry politics soon. Devor's still bitter about how they treated me after we got ringed.
Drissa pulled at her earring.
Is that what those mean?
Besides a few thousand queens out of your purse, yes. The ringsmiths tell women that the rings will make their husbands more submissive. And they tell men that they'll make their wives more... shall we say, amorous? It's said that in ancient times, a ringed husband could be aroused by no woman but his wife. You can imagine how well they sold, but it's all lies. Maybe it was true once, but the rings now barely have enough magic to seal seamlessly and stay shiny.
Oh, nice sauce.
Carla's note to Aline suddenly made a lot more sense. V hadn't stolen some expensive jewelry. She'd stolen a man's promise of his undying love. V had a sick feeling in her stomach again, but this time she didn't think it had anything to do with Tevo's magic.
Are you ready, V? This one's really going to hurt, and not just physically. Lifting compulsion will make you relive your most significant experiences with authority. I'm guessing it won't be pleasant for you.
Good guess.
Drissa Nile was the only one who could help now. Logan was in bad shape. Getting him off of Voss Island had been easy enough, but it had taken time, and Kyla wasn't sure how much of that Logan had left. Logan had been stabbed in the back, and he had all kinds of cuts, including some along his ribs and arm that were red, inflamed, and filled with pus. Few mages had made the city their home for the last couple of decades, but Kyla was starting to believe that the Chantry never abandoned any corner of the world. He knew of a woman in town who had a great reputation as a healer, and if anyone was a mage in the city, she was. It had better be so. If anyone needed healing magic, it was Logan, especially with that stuff in his arm. Kyla wasn't even sure what it was, but it seemed to have burned its way into the flesh. The strangest thing was that it appeared not to have fallen randomly on Logan's arm like he would have expected from gushing blood, but in a pattern. Kylo didn't even know if he should put water on, cover it, or what. Anything might make it worse. And what the hell had that thing been? In repayment for the many cuts it had given him, Kylo had taken a fang from the beast, but his survival had been as much luck as skill. If there hadn't been so many stalagmites in the chamber, the creature's speed would have overmatched anything Kylo could do. Its skin was impregnable, even with all the strength of Kyler's talent. He'd guessed that its eyes would be vulnerable, but it had already protected them from him 3 times before it got distracted by Logan and Nasha. And the swim, that thing speeding after him under the water, had been sheer terror. He'd probably dream of it for the rest of his life. Regardless, saving Logan was the best thing he'd ever done. Logan had needed to be saved, had deserved to be saved, and Kyler had been the only one who could save him. This was Kyler's purpose. This redeemed his sacrifices. This was why he was the Night Angel. He crossed into the Warrens with his odd cargo and loaded them into a covered wagon. Then he drove to Drissa Nile's shop. The place was in the wealthiest location in the Warrens, right off the Vanden Bridge, and it was fairly large, with a sign above it that read Nile and Nile Physickers over a picture of the healing wand for the illiterate. Like Durzo before him, Kyler had avoided the place, fearing that a mage might recognize what he was. Now he had no choice. He pulled up in back of the shop, grabbed Logan from the bed of the wagon, and carried him to the back door with Nasher following him. The door was locked. A small surge of talent took care of that. Kylo carried Logan inside. The shop had several waiting rooms off a central waiting area. At the sound of the latch bursting through the frame, a man was emerging from one of the patient rooms where Kylo glimpsed 2 women talking before the physicker closed the door. A quick glance confirmed that the front door was barred too.
What are you doing? You can't break in here.
What the hell kind of physicker locks his doors in the middle of the day?
As Kylo looked into the physicker's eyes, he knew the man wasn't a criminal, but he did see something else. A warm green light like a forest after a storm when the sun comes out.
You're a mage.
The man went rigid.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Kylo felt something brush him quickly, try to probe him, but the Kakari didn't allow it.
You're invisible to me. It's like you're dead.
Are you a healer or not? My friend's dying.
For the first time, the man turned his bespectacled eyes to Logan. Kyler had thrown a blanket over the king to ward him from curious eyes.
Tevor Nile, at your service. Please, put him on the table there.
They went into an empty room. Tevor Nile threw the blanket back. Kyler had laid Logan on the table face down. The physicker sliced open Logan's blood and dirt and sweat-encrusted rag of a tunic to look at the gash on Logan's back. He was already shaking his head.
It's too much. I don't even know where to start.
You're a mage. Start with magic.
I'm not a...
If you lie to me one more time, I swear I'll kill you. Why else a hearth that size in a room this small? Why else the retractable section of roof? Because you need fire or sunlight for magic. I'm not going to tell anyone. You have to heal this man. Look at him. Do you know who he is?
Kylo rolled Logan over, throwing away the rag of a tunic. Tevar Nihl wasn't looking at Logan's face. He was looking at the glowing imprint on his arm.
Dreza!
What do you mean you think? Is it gone or isn't it? We're fairly certain.
Dreza!
Dreza Nihl's irritated face appeared. Like her husband, she had a wizened look, despite being maybe in her late 40s. Both were small and scholarly, wearing spectacles and shapeless clothes. As with her husband, Kyla saw no taint of evil in her, but there was definitely that something extra there that he thought was magic. Two mages married to each other. In Sonaria, it was an oddity, certainly, especially here. Kyla could only believe that it was the most fortunate oddity possible. If two mage healers couldn't fix Logan, no one could. Driss's irritation disappeared the second she saw Logan. Her eyes went wide. She came close and stared from his glowing arm to his face and back again in wonder.
Where'd he get this?
Can you help him?
Driss looked at Tevar. He shook his head.
Not after what we just did. I don't think I have enough power in me. Not for this.
We'll try.
Tevar nodded, submissive, and Kyla noticed the rings in their ears for the first time. Gold. Both of them matching. They were Wadriners. If it had been any other circumstance, he would have asked them if those damn rings really did hold spells. Tevar drew back the section of roof to let the cloudy morning sunlight in. Drissa touched the wood already stacked in the hearth, and it began blazing. They took up positions on either side of Logan, and the air above him shimmered. Kyla brought the Kakari up within him to his eyes. The weaves over Logan that had been just barely visible to him were suddenly clear.
Do you know herbs?
Yes.
In the great room, get Tuntun leaf, Grubel ointment, silver leaf, ragweed, and a white poultice on the top shelf.
Kyla came back a minute later with the ingredients, plus a few others he thought would be helpful. Tevar looked at them and nodded, but didn't seem capable of speech.
Good, good.
Kyla began applying the herbs and poultices while Drissa and Tevar worked the weaves of magic. For Kyla, it was like watching a dance. Tevar and Drissa worked together in perfect harmony, but Tevar was tiring. Within 5 minutes, Tevar was flagging. His parts of the weaves were getting shaky and thin. Kyla felt impotent. He had talent here, talent to spare. Even after everything, he still had talent. He willed the Kakari back, willed himself to be unshielded, tried to will all that magic into Logan. Nothing happened.
Take it, damn you! Get better!
Logan didn't stir. Tevar looked at Kyla apologetically. He patted Kyla's hand. Light blazed through the entire room. It burned beyond the magical spectrum into the visual, throwing their shadows on the walls. The weaves over Logan, which had been flagging, fading into nothing just a moment before, now burned incandescent. Heat flashed through Kyla's hand. Tevar gaped like a fish.
Tevar, use it!
As Kyla felt the talent flood out of him, he felt his magic all the way through Tevar being pulled down into Logan's body. It was out of his control. Tevar was directing Kyla's talent completely. Sweat broke out on Driss's face, and Kyla could feel the two mages working feverishly. They ran magic through Logan's body like a comb through tangled hair. They touched the glowing scar on his arm, still glowing hours later. But there was strangely nothing wrong. It wasn't something they could fix. The healing magic moved right past it. Logan would live. In fact, he was probably healthier than when he'd gone into the maw. But Tevar didn't let go of Kyler. He turned and stared at him, eyes wide.
Tevor?
What are you? Are you a Woodmeister?
Kylo tried to draw the Kakari up to sever the connection, but he couldn't. He tried to ready his muscles with talent strength, but he couldn't.
Tevor!
Did you see this? I've never...
Tevor, release him!
Honey, he could incinerate us both with this much talent!
So you'd use a man's own magic against him after he submitted it to you? How do the brothers look on that? Is that the kind of man I married?
Tevor dropped his head and his hold on Kylo's talent simultaneously.
I'm sorry.
Kylo drained. Empty. Weak. It was almost as disconcerting to get control of his talent back as it was to give it away. He felt like he'd gone 2 days without sleeping. He barely had the energy to be excited that Logan was going to make it.
I think we'd better see to you and your simple friend. Your wounds can use more mundane treatments. The king should wake this evening. Why don't you come with me to another room?
She opened the door, and Kylo stepped into the waiting area. Nashor had curled up in a corner and was sleeping. But directly in front of Kylo was a beautiful, shapely woman with long red hair. V. She was staring at him down the length of a bare sword. Its tip touched his throat. He couldn't read the look in those green eyes, but it was something wild. V stepped back 3 measured and balanced steps. She knelt in the center of the room, bowed her head, pulled her ponytail to one side, and laid the bare sword across her hands. She raised the sword in offering.
My life is yours, Kylo. I surrender to your judgment.
Seven of the 11 rent girls had left the safe house to see if they had families they could go back to. 6 had come back weeping. Some were now widows. Others were simply rejected by fathers and boyfriends and husbands who could see only whores and disgrace. Galdros's courage failed her. She never left the safe house. For some reason, she'd been able to face death. She'd emasculated Burl Lahr and watched him bleed to death, tied to her bed, screaming into a gag. Then she'd moved the body, put fresh sheets on the bed, and welcomed in another Caladoran soldier. He was a young man who'd always had sex first and afterward was half-hearted in the beatings and the invocation. He always seemed disgusted with himself.
Why do you do it? You don't like hurting me. I know you don't.
You don't know what it's like. They have spies everywhere. Your own family will turn you in if you make the wrong joke. He knows.
But why beat up whores?
It's not just whores. It's everyone. It's the suffering we need for the strangers.
What do you mean? What strangers?
But he wouldn't say any more. A moment later, he stared at the bedsheets. Blood in the mattress was soaking through the fresh sheet. Caldrosa stabbed him in the eye. The whole time, even when he came after her, bleeding, roaring, furious, she'd never been afraid. Facing Tommen, though, that was too much. They'd fought bitterly before she left for Mama Kay's. He would have forcibly restrained her except that he'd been beaten so severely he couldn't get out of bed. Tommen had always been jealous. No, Caldrosa couldn't face him. She'd leave with the others and go to the rebel camp. She didn't know what she'd do there. They were inland and nowhere near a river, so jobs as a captain would likely be scarce. In fact, if she couldn't obtain clothes that covered her up more, honest labor of any kind would be scarce. Still, after Caladorans, being a rent girl for Cenarians might not be too bad. All the girls tensed. It wasn't the signal knock. No one moved. Daedra picked up a poker from the fireplace.
Please, I mean no harm. I am unarmed. Please, let me in.
Caldrosa's heart leapt into her throat. She went to the door in a fog.
What are you doing?
Caldrosa opened the peep window, and there he was. Tommen saw her, and his face lit up.
You're alive! Oh, gods! Caldrosa!
I thought you might be dead. What's wrong? Let me in.
The latch seemed to lift itself. Calderosa was helpless. The door burst open and Tommen swept her into his arms.
Oh, Kali, I didn't know if...
He only noticed the other women gathered around the room then, their expressions either joy or jealousy. Though he was hugging her and she couldn't see his face, Caldrosa knew that he must be blinking stupidly at the sight of so many beautiful, exotic women all at the same time, and all of them scarcely wearing anything. Even Daedra's virginal dress breathed sensuality. His hug was slowly stiffening, and Caldrosa was limp in his arms. Tommen stepped back and looked at her. His hands flopped off her shoulders like a fish onto the deck, spastically. It really was a beautiful costume. Caldrosa had always hated her skinny figure. She thought she looked like a boy. Wearing this, she didn't feel scrawny or boyish. She felt trim, nubile. The open-fronted shirt not only showed that she was tanned to the waist, but also conspired to give her cleavage and expose half of each breast. The scandalous trousers fit like a glove. In short, it was exactly the kind of thing Tommen would have loved to see Caldrosa wearing in their home. For the brief interludes that extended between when she surprised him with it and when he caught her after chasing her around the house. But this wasn't their home, and these clothes weren't for Tommen. His eyes filled with grief. He looked away.
You're beautiful.
Tommen.
Caldrosa was trying to cover herself with her arms. It was a bitter irony. She was trying to cover herself from her husband's eyes when she had flaunted herself for strangers she despised.
So, how many men have you been with?
They would have killed you.
So now I'm not man enough?
Tommen wasn't crying now. He had always been brave, fierce. It was one of the things she loved about him. He would have died to save her from this. He'd never realized he would have died, and then she'd have had to do this anyway.
They hurt me.
How many?
I don't know.
Part of her knew that he was like a dog crazed with pain, snapping at its master. But the disgust on his face was too much. She was disgusting. She surrendered to the deadness and despair.
A lot? 9 or 10 a day?
His face twisted, and he turned away.
Tommen, don't leave me! Please!
He stopped, but he didn't turn. Then he walked out. The other girls went to her, their hearts broken anew as her grief mirrored theirs. Knowing she would not be comforted, they went to her because she had no one else who would. And neither did they. Mama Kay stepped into the physicker's shop as Kyler swept the sword up into his hand, but she was too late to stop him. V didn't move. She knelt motionless, her shiny red hair pulled out of the sword's path to her neck. The sword descended and bounced off.
You will not do murder in my shop! We've accomplished an excellent piece of healing with this woman, and I'll not have you spoil it.
You healed her?
V still hadn't moved. She faced the floor.
From compulsion. Am I right?
How did you know that?
If it happens in my city, I know. The God King bound her with the magic that forced her to obey direct orders.
Oh, how convenient. I don't care. She killed Jarl. I mopped up his blood. I buried him.
Kyler, V and Jarl practically grew up together. Jarl protected her. They were friends, Kyler. The kind of friends that never forget. I don't believe anything less than magic could have compelled her to hurt him. Isn't that right, V?
Tears streamed down V's face in mute testimony.
What did Durzo teach you, Kyler? A wet boy is a knife. Is the guilt the knife's or the hands?
Both. And damn Durzo for his lies.
There was a knife on Kyler's belt, but he'd already tested its edge. Sister Drissa had blunted it, as he had guessed she might. But she didn't know about the blades up his sleeves, nor could she stop the weapons that were his hands. V saw the look in his eyes. She was a wet boy. She knew, He could get a knife out and across her throat in the time it took Trissa to blink. Let the healer try to cure death. V's eyes were black with guilt, a mishmash of dark images he couldn't comprehend. A short rush of black figures passed through his mind's eye. A victim?
She's murdered fewer people than you have.
The thought hit him like a shot in the solar plexus. Some guilt. Some judge. And the look on her face was all readiness above the tears. There was no self-pity, no avoidance of responsibility. Her eyes spoke for her.
I killed Jarl. I deserve to die. If you kill me, I won't blame you. Before you decide, you have to know there's more. You were a secondary target. After Jarl, I couldn't do it.
Well, that's commendable.
So I kidnapped Yuli to make sure you'd follow me.
You what?
I figured you'd follow me back to Cenaria. The God King wants you alive, but Sister Ariel captured me and Yuli. When we found you, I thought you were dead. I thought I was free, so I escaped Sister Ariel and came here.
Where's Yuli?
On her way to the Chantry. Yuli's talented. She's going to be a Magia.
It was horrifying and yet perfect. Yuli would be a sister. She'd be taken care of, educated. Kyler had imposed Yuli on Aline. Aline hadn't chosen to have a daughter who was more the age of a little sister. It wasn't a burden that had been fair for Kyler to ask her to assume. This way, and with the fortune that Kyler had left her, Aline would be free to have her own life again. It was all logical. He had a niggling doubt that he wasn't thinking the way Aline would think. He could do nothing about that. Finding out that the damage had been minimized, hadn't it, eased his mind. A sudden fire lit in Mama Kay's eyes at the thought of her daughter being taken to the Chantry, but Kyler couldn't tell whether she was upset that her daughter had been taken or pleased that her daughter would certainly become a woman of consequence. Either way, Mama Kay quickly smothered it. She wasn't about to let strangers know Yuli was her daughter. If he got through this, Kyler would go to the Chantry and see Yuli. He wasn't angry that they'd taken her from V. If anything, he owed them. And for a girl who was talented, going to the Chantry wasn't really optional. It was supposed to be dangerous for a child to learn on her own. But if Yuli didn't want to stay and they tried to keep her, Kyler would tear down the white seraph around the sister's ears. But just thinking about Yuli made him think about Aline. And thinking about Aline threw his emotions into turmoil.
Why are you so eager to save V?
Because if you're going to kill the God King, you'll need V's help.
Say one thing for Kurok. The mages are wrong.
It wasn't in the form of a sword for purely symbolic reasons. The son of a bitch could cut. It was a good thing, too. The Sakurai were implacable. They were called Sakurai, called Jaren for sword lords, for good reason. Nonetheless, Fear was a blade master of the second echelon. The first clash left three of the Karen warriors dead and gave Fear a short, tough pony. Soon, Fear's height and weight proved a liability again. The pony tired and slowed. In the darkness, Fear let it go. If he were lucky, the Sakurai would lose his trail and follow the horse. He was lucky. It bought him a number of hours on foot. It brought him to the crest of the mountain. He had cut a sapling before he'd hiked above the tree line, and now he was working on the wood with Kurok. The sword had an edge like he couldn't believe, but it wasn't a plane or a chisel. Right now, he needed both and a few other tools besides. Dorian once told him about a sport the more suicidal Highland tribes practiced. They called it shloosh. It consisted of strapping small sleds to one's feet and going downhill at incredible speeds, standing. Dorian contended that they could steer, but Fear hadn't figured out how. All he knew was that he had to go faster than the currents pursuing him, and there was no way he could build a full sled in the time he had. What he couldn't accomplish with the blade, he accomplished with magic. He was a maker, after all. Wood chips flew as the sun rose. But he had skylined himself like a fool, standing right at the edge of the mountain so that his figure was clearly visible for miles. The Sakurai saw him before he saw them. They had dismounted and were walking on top of the snow with broad, woven bamboo shoes strapped to their feet. The gait they had to assume to keep from tripping over the snowshoes was comical, until Fear realized how fast it let them travel. They would cover in a few minutes what had taken Fear half an hour, lumbering through the snow. He worked faster. He almost forgot to turn up the front tip of each long, narrow sled. He shook his head. He'd caught that mistake. What else had he missed? He didn't have time to fashion proper fasteners, so he wove a web of magic around his shoes and feet and bound them directly to the wood planks. He stood.
Dumb, why'd I square the edges?
He should have left them curving like a boat's hull. Standing was embarrassingly difficult.
Oh, for fuck's sake!
The Currens came closer. He was a second echelon blade master, and he was this clumsy? This was madness. He should have just run downhill. He rolled over onto his butt and finally used the length of the planks to lever himself into a squat. He stood and tried to step forward. The schlushes, which he had smoothed and polished, did exactly what they were supposed to do. They slid back and forth, and Fear barely moved. Fear looked over his shoulder. The Sakurai were a bare 100 paces back now. If it came to a fight, the schlushes would doom him. He stumbled, caught an edge, and threw his foot to the side to catch himself. He staggered and slid forward. The joy was as great as he'd felt when he'd been named a maker in the Brotherhood. He turned each schlush outward and pushed forward. It worked until he got to the edge and started moving downhill faster than he could step. The mountain was steep and the snow mercifully deep. He was dimly aware that he needed to point the schlushes downhill. After 6 or 7 rolls, it happened. Suddenly, Fear burst out of the omnipresent snow. The snow was at least 3 feet deep, but he was on top of it. His heart was a thunder in his chest. He was headed straight downhill at incredible speed. In moments, he was going faster than the fastest horse, and then faster and faster still.
Oh, shit!
Controlling the two schlushes independently was almost impossible. So he quickly lashed them together with magic, both front and back, giving each a little leeway. Finally, Fear learned how to steer. He steered around a rocky death and looked downhill for the first time, squinting against the white.
Oh, damn! What is that line in the snow?
He shot over the precipice. Then, the miracle happened again, and he popped out of the snow to fly downhill once more, his heart hammered. He had Kurok. He was safe. The Currens wouldn't follow him down the mountain. Doing so would put them in Cenaria. He just escaped.
Incredible.
Lantano Garawashi was a big man for a Curren. His red hair hung thick and long with dozens of narrow sections of differently colored hair bound in. In Kura, it was said that you could read a man's life in his hair. At a boy's clan initiation, his head was shaved bald except for one forelock. When the forelock had grown the length of 3 fingers, it was bound with a tiny ring, and the boy declared a man. When he killed his first warrior, the forelock was bound again at the scalp, and he became a Sakurai. The shorter the span between the two rings on their forelocks, the better. Thereafter, when the Sakurai killed an enemy, he bound the slain man's forelock to his own hair. At first, a few warriors had thought Lantano only had one ring, because his first two were right on top of each other. He killed his first opponent at 13. In the 17 years since, he'd added 59 locks to his own hair. Had he been born a little higher, all of Kura would have followed him. But a Sakurai's soul was his sword, and nothing could change that Lantano had been born with an iron sword, a peasant sword. Lantano was a warlord because Karen tradition allowed any man of excellence to lead armies, but for Lantano, it had become a trap. As soon as he stopped fighting, his power ended. He'd begun fighting for Kura's regent Hideo Watanabe. Then, when the regent ordered him to disband, he became a mercenary instead. Desperate men flocked to his banners for one reason. He never lost. The giant was becoming a speck in the distance.
Warmaster, do you wish us to follow?
We'll try the caves.
Into Cenaria?
Just 100 Sakurai. It'll be a cold winter. Killing this giant will give us a tail to keep us warm.
Mama Kay wanted Agon and his army to take Logan to the rebel camp. If he were to be king, he needed an army. Kylo refused to leave his friend, at least until Logan was conscious. When Kylo fainted, Agon asked Mama Kay if they should load Logan onto the wagon. Mama Kay cursed and railed, but said no. They never asked V's opinion. She was content. She wanted to atone for what she'd done, but she didn't want to think. Even as she sat with Kylo and Mama Kay and Agon, a part of her urged her to kill them. The God King rewarded those who served him well. She could wipe out all the greatest threats to the God King's rule in 1 minute. She didn't obey that thought. She'd been judged innocent. She'd come completely clean. Almost. She'd realized only lately that perhaps the most damaging thing she'd done to Kylo was something that had seemed trivial at the time. A small gesture of contempt. She'd pocketed the note and pair of earrings Kylo had left for Aline. It was only today that she'd learned they were wedding rings. Drissa and Tevar had explained the custom at length. Between taking those and the note, V had left Aline with nothing. She hadn't been brave enough to tell Kylo about that, had she? It was just too much truth. She could have accepted Kylo killing her, but she didn't know what to do if Kylo despised her. If he knew her, he would despise her. There was no way love could overcome so much.
Love? What am I thinking? Limit yourself to fighting and fucking, V. You're good at those.
The door to a patient room opened, and Kylo came in. Logan stepped in from another. For the first time, V saw Kylo's smile. It did something strange inside her when he smiled like that, and he wasn't even looking at her. He bowed deeply.
Your Majesty?
Logan was achingly thin, his bones poking at his skin. Despite that, he had an unmistakable aura of rallying health. Dressed richly once more, he was handsome despite his ordeal. He crossed the distance quickly and hugged Kylo.
I'm sorry. I came too late that night. I found blood and I thought... I'm so sorry.
You've done so well, my friend. I'm the one who's sorry. I'm sorry I ever doubted you. Someday soon, we will have to talk. You did some things down there that...
Logan looked around, aware of the others.
That I'm really curious about. And I seem to have some holes in my memory. Like how I got this.
He pulled back his sleeve, and V and Mama Kay gasped. Sunken into his arm was something like a glowing, silvery-green tattoo. He didn't show the whole thing, but to V, the lines looked stylized and abstract, not random.
Your Majesty, I would be very cautious about showing that.
I'm sorry to press you, but we have to make some decisions.
You mean I have to make some decisions?
Yes, Your Majesty. Pardon me.
Logan addressed Kylo first.
You have done us greater service than we could demand or hope for. I won't order you, but we deem it most meet for...
Logan got a faraway look and let the sentence trail off.
Sire?
Odd. I've been cursing with the worst of the holers for months, and now I'm back to deeming and judging what is meet. Kyla, it comes down to this. If you can kill the God King before our armies close for battle, we might avert battle altogether. I ask you to do this, but I won't order it. You've already made enormous sacrifices to save me, and I know that you don't trust this woman. But if she can help, use her help. Her surrender when she could have killed us, is proof enough of her good intentions for me. V is as much a weapon as you are, and I can let none of the weapons in my small arsenal lie idle.
You think that's the right thing to do?
Yes.
Then it's done. What are you going to do?
I'm going to ask Terra Grayson for my army. Then I'm going to take back our country.
It won't be that simple.
It never is.
Aline woke with a blinding headache. She couldn't move her arms or legs. When she tried, her feet and hands tingled. Opening her eyes, she saw three other captives bound hand and foot as she was. Another rope bound them to each other. They lay in the darkness, their forms lit only by the flickering light of the Caladoran's fire. Aline lay nearest to the six Caladorans, who were talking quietly by the fire. She didn't dare move too much and alert them, so all she could see of them was the young man who'd captured her. From the conversation, she picked up that his name was Goran. The others mocked him for getting hurt by some woman. For a moment, the gravity of Aline's situation threatened to overwhelm her. Kyla didn't know she was here. No one knew she was here. No one was going to come save her. These men could do anything they wanted to her, and there was nothing she could do to stop them. Her chest tightened with fear, and she couldn't think, couldn't breathe. Then she started praying, reminding herself that the god knew she was here. It was a small thing for the god to save her. Eventually, she calmed. By that time, several of the soldiers had gone to their blankets to sleep, leaving Goran and someone she couldn't see.
I don't think Wordmeister Dada has even told His Holiness what we're doing. There's a reason Black Barrow is forbidden ground. If His Holiness finds out what happens to us...
Neftara is a great man and most zealous in his service of Kali. If he serves her and His Holiness does not, whose side would you rather be on?
I heard he wants to raise a titan. Is that what you're saying?
The Wordmeister wants to do 100 things. Of course, he wants a titan. But that isn't why he needs untouched young women, is it?
Kalevos Razan me. Kali, come live in me.
Indeed.
Is it possible?
The Wordmeister thinks so.
Damn. Then what about the boy? What's he for?
Not that important. They'll kill him and see what they can raise from his body. The Meisters just want the corpse fresh.
Aline had heard of Black Barrow. It was an ancient but dead battlefield. It was said nothing grew there to this day. But she couldn't understand any of the rest of it, except that Wordmeister Neftada had something planned for her that was worse than slavery. She lay her head back down and saw that the captive nearest her was awake. He was a young boy. He looked terrified. Mama Kay had saved Logan's life today. His little army, consisting of Lord General Agon, Mama Kay, and Agon's dogs, was riding into the rebel camp to cheers. It would have been much different if Mama Kay hadn't planted rumors that Logan was returning after triumphing over the worst horrors of them all. Without the rumors as forerunners, the band would have been greeted as an unknown army, and Terra Grayson would have had Logan killed. Doubtless, many tears would have been shed afterward about the terrible mistake. The old, naive Logan wouldn't have believed that Terra Grayson would do such a thing. Logan the Holer knew differently. He was a changed man, quieter, sober. He knew all too well what people would do when they were threatened. And Terra Grayson had to see Logan as a threat. She'd rallied support for the last 3 months. She'd survived assassination attempts and lost family members. She'd assembled an army and had brought it to the eve of battle. All to be queen. Logan's appearance threatened to make her ambition implode on the eve of her triumph. His legitimacy was unquestionable. He'd come from the nation's leading family. He'd been declared the Gunder's heir, and he'd married into the Gunder family. Numerous families had sworn fealty to Terra Grayson only because they had thought they were free of their earlier oaths to the Gyres. Any other time, Logan would have gone to Havamir and sent missives to all the families in the realm, including the Graysons. He would have given Terra a chance to see her coalition falling apart and then offered her a suitable position. This wasn't any other time. The rebel army was assembled less than a mile from the God Kings. The Cenarians outnumber the Caladoran army 2-1. The Caladorans had Meisters and Verdmeisters, but it still looked like a sure victory. To Logan, Agon, and Mama Kay, it looked like a Cenarian massacre in the offing. So here he was, riding at the head of his tiny army of 100 into the heart of the rebel camp. He was lucky it was an overcast day, because after 3 months in the hole, his eyes couldn't handle full daylight. Squinting didn't lend itself to a particularly regal look. They were nearing the cluster of the nobles' pavilions when a group of a dozen horsemen rode out to meet them. They were led by an officer carrying an unstrung Alataran longbow like a staff. Logan and his army came to a stop.
"Declare yourself. This is King Logan Gyre, by law and tradition, heir to the throne and now king of our great land. The king is dead. Long live the king!"
It was a declaration of war, and the word would blaze through the camp within minutes. Mama Kay had already sent word to Logan's steward, and the Gyre men-at-arms were already positioned nearest the noble pavilions.
"The queen will see you now, my lord."
Logan dismounted in front of Tara Grayson's pavilion. When Mama Kay and Agon made to follow him, the guard stopped them.
"Only you, sir."
Logan stared at the man. He said nothing. For a moment, he let the beast rise within. He had not lived through hell to be stopped by a guard. The feeling flew past determination to rage. He felt his forearm tingle. The guard stepped back.
"My lord, only nobles are...
Logan stared at him, and the words dried up. Mama Kay and Agon followed him inside. The queen's pavilion was huge. Tables and maps and nobles were scattered liberally around the interior. Some of the men looked positively comical, their fat squashed into armor they hadn't donned in 20 years. Black and white tiles sat in two bowls on one of the tables.
"By the gods, they're voting on their battle plan."
Mama Kay was looking around the room as quickly as she could, counting allies, potential allies, and sure enemies. She knew she could give Logan a crown if he gave her 2 weeks to work her special brand of truth. With only 1 day until a major battle against the one enemy everyone hated, the odds changed drastically. Her only hope was that someone disposable would attack her or Logan or Brant Agon first. Then she could ruin him, and making an implacable foe of him wouldn't hurt Logan too much.
"Why, Logan Gyre, how the mighty have fallen."
Tara Grayson emerged from behind several taller lords, sashaying across the luxurious rugs.
"Who would have expected you to appear in the company of whores and has-beens? Or is it cripples and cunts?"
"Looking to get into the business?"
"If you speak like that again, I'll kill you myself."
Luke Grayson was Tara's brother, 17 years old, handsome, and a damned fool.
Pardon me. Titles are switching hands so fast recently, I'd forgotten I was speaking to a duchess."
"Queen! Your queen!"
"But here stands the rightful king, designated heir by King Gunder the Ninth and received by common acclamation, the man to whom you've already pledged fealty."
But she knew she'd already lost. She saw it in the defiance, the absolute hatred in Tara Grayson's face.
"That's enough, Guinevere."
"May I remind everyone that tomorrow we face the God King and his witches?"
It was Count Drake, ever the peacemaker.
"We need no reminders. We have our army, we have our battlefield, we have the advantage, and in a few more moments, we'll have our battle plan."
"No."
"Excuse me?"
"You have His Majesty's army. My lords, many of you were there at the feast before the coup. Garrett Irwer, your father died beside me in the North Tower, as did your uncle, Bran Brayton. They died going to save our king, Logan Gyre. You were there."
"Enough! We know what the Mad King said."
So the king had been insane when he designated Logan his heir. It wasn't a perfect line of attack, but it was good enough. Given time, Mama Kay would have reminded everyone of the timing of the coup, of the irrelevance of the king's sanity to the legality of his decrees, and of Logan's marriage to Janine. Given time, Mama Kay could have orchestrated pressure from all sides to get Tara to surrender her claim. Now all that was immaterial. She simply had to wait for the inevitable.
My lady.
Dukhavran Wesseros stepped forward.
They say only what would be said in back rooms and great rooms throughout the kingdom if there were time. It seems to me that we all have decisions to make now, and little time in which to make them.
I won't hear their lies.
Don't you see? If you won't hear them out, Logan will leave, and he won't leave alone. He'll take half of our army with him, maybe more. Does anyone fancy taking on the Caladorans with half an army?
Closer, but you're worried about the wrong person leaving.
As you say, the king was mad when he died. The Sakage poisoned him at the feast.
Poisoned? You murdered him, Brant.
Yes, I killed him. I won't justify that deed now. What's important is that Calador wished to wipe out the royal family to cause exactly this. They wished to split any resistance before it could begin. King Gunder saw that coming, which is why, not the night of the coup when he was poisoned, but earlier in the day, he married his daughter Janine to Logan. Many of you have sworn oaths to Lady Grayson, but your fealty was already owed to Logan Geyer. Thus, you're released from your oaths to the Duchess.
I release none of you.
Hold on!
Duke Wesseros looked a lot like his sister Nalia, the last queen. He'd been out of the city checking on lands the Lycanat had seized in eastern Cenaria when the coup had occurred.
The hour grows late, and an army waits for us. Stand to the side of the men or woman you would have rule us.
Why don't you vote with the stones instead, that people may vote for whom they truly wish to lead?
Tomorrow we must stand on the field of battle. I think today we have the courage to stand in a tent.
Slowly, the people started moving. Mama Kay had been depressingly accurate in her estimations of who would end up where. For the most part, the minor nobles looked like they would prefer to go to Logan, but didn't dare defy their lords, which was why Mama Kay had wanted the blind vote. Terra had concentrated her bribes on the powerful. As it was, they had a three-way split. Logan, Terra, and Undecided.
As I suspected.
Duke Wesseros led the Undecided camp.
The rhetoric has done nothing. With the assassinations of the Gunders, only three great families are left in our country, and here we stand. It seems to me that there is a golden mean, a middle way. Logan Geyer, Terra Grayson, with the fate of all your countrymen at stake, will you put aside your own selfish ambitions?
What are you talking about?
Logan already knew. Mama Kay could see it in his stony face.
This night, on the eve of a battle that will determine the future of our land, will you split our forces or will you join them? Logan, Terra, will you marry tonight?
Terra looked around the room quickly, judging who stood with her. Her support was eroding. She looked at those who stood defiant on Logan's side, those who stood passive with Duke Wesseros, then she looked at Logan. It wasn't the look a woman gives a suitor. It was a probe for weakness.
For the country I love? Yes.
Logan?
Yes.
God help him.